do you see any glimmer of hope in our recent and current financial meltdown?
But I think the underlying, two underlying arguments here. One is the question of sustainability, which I think is going to work its way through the whole system. Mm-hmm. And related to that, of course, is information technology, which is, you know, changing the nature of organisations.
Yes.
And the building isn't a useful unit of analysis anymore, because organisations are always bigger or smaller and are constantly changing, and they, at least, you know, half of them operate in a virtual world, in a placeless world. It's going to demonstrate that this, we've got too much space, it's going to be a lot of people are going to be frightened by that, and there may be a beneficial process that would be stimulated by that process.
And, you know, when your argument in here about the irrational use, irrationally low use of the existing space that we have seems, you know, yeah. But that even for people whose interest is in making money from the built environment, that argument doesn't seem to have penetrated.
Yeah. Well, actually, I think it will penetrate eventually.
And there are many things about the American office, for example, that are extremely intelligent that the Europeans didn't pick up until much later, because there was less of the Gesamtkunstwerk and more of the tolerance of people like interior designers and space planners and decorators and others, who had their own, within the building, their own scope for their own short-term design to meet the needs of five-year, 10-year tenants. That system was invented here. It's a wonderful system, and it's a perfect example of not getting everything right in the night, but leaving scope for change and development and adaptation. And I think that's the principle I'm trying to articulate in this conversation. Not all design decisions have the same longevity.
One of the things I like about New York, this part of New York certainly, is the juxtaposition of old and new in the way in which the blocks have been developed. And that, I think, is another recipe for long-term success of an urban fabric that is capable of being modified internally and externally as change, social and technological change develops. The older stock has been absorbed for other purposes and moved out of office use into other purposes. Older buildings turned into apartments, for example.
There's been a phenomenal growth in residential usage downtown since 9/11.
Well, my guess is that downtown could do with a lot more retail. One strategy would be to create an infrastructure that would allow that possibility to be taken up later were it to happen. Meanwhile, cities being cities, something's got to happen anyway. You can't leave the site vacant. I think there's another theme, that the design of the interstitial spaces and the use of the interstitial spaces may, again, in the context of the knowledge economy, becoming much more important than the buildings themselves, what happens inside them. So designing the full spectrum of uses in over quite a large area, having a mix of uses, and then having the principle of change built into that so it can develop and mutate and move from one kind of use to another as needs change. These are the fundamental secrets, I suppose, of urbanism.
How does one design for that, though? Because that actually has always seemed to me to be a creative nature of interesting cities. The most interesting places tend not to be at all the work of one hand.
Yes. One financier.
Right.
It's always been difficult, but I think we've made it worse by the way in which buildings are financed, procured, developed, and which has cumulatively over the 20th century made each building more and more specific and separate in itself, rather than something that adds to a more complex urban fabric. But certainly from an architectural point of view and a user point of view, I think about what different building forms can accommodate, and how ambiguity and choice and potential can be built into designs over a long period, thinking about them in a much more the buildings themselves in a much more sophisticated way, but also thinking about the nature of the interstitial spaces and who owns them, who manages them, who loves them, who looks after them, who takes advantage of them. That's something that I think we have not given enough thought to.
Thinking about the interstitial spaces.
serendipity or accommodating the unexpected is very hard to do as a designer.
Well, I don't see why. I think it's all about scenarios. It's all about thinking through what could happen and what is fixed. Buildings aren't made out of glass and concrete and stone, as I often say. They're made out of time, layers of time. The paradox, and absolutely fascinating paradox about the power of technology and its ability to allow people to choose where and when and where to work, is that it actually makes more poignant and more important the things that city-like things that are good at bringing people together. The more we disperse, the more we need to congregate. And I think the true nature of a city is discourse in the knowledge economy. It's about places, serendipitous encounters, things that would not happen. And I think that's another design principle that ought to be brought into the urbanism, creating places which are valuable because they are unprogrammed and open-ended and allow accidents to happen, as it were. There was for a long time a very strong correlation between the patterns of work and the shape of the buildings. What's happening is that the patterns of work are changing faster than the shape of the buildings, and we have models of buildings which are inherently vulnerable because they're not permeable, they're not good at accommodating groups, they make assumptions about levels of occupancy which are untenable and easily refuted, and they can't be changed into anything else. They're brittle, they snap. They can only do one trick. I encountered this in another form in the regeneration of the decayed industrial cities of the UK, Glasgow, Liverpool, Birmingham, in order to bring great stretches of the Liverpool docks back into beneficial use, to realise that they could be used for a wider range of purposes than that for which they were originally designed. They could be used as art galleries, they could be used as workshops for small businesses, they could be used for hotels and a wide variety of things. What's the lesson there? Something about being tough enough and have enough volume to accommodate change, and to have columns in the right places and ceiling heights of an attractive kind, to have a relationship to the sky and the outside that is tolerable. And these were considered to be obsolete and useless, but they were brought back to life. So I think the difference is that these buildings are so flimsy and value engineered that they have only very limited range of spectrum of utility. And really, this discussion about the nature of buildings and their uses is only a subset of a much bigger discourse about the nature of life in what I hope will be a much better world. I don't think the 20th century is my favourite century, actually. I think one or two things wrong with it.